Hi everyone, it's Emily back again with another episode of the 21 and Sensory podcast. And today I have a very special guest. I have Vicky from @actuallyaspling. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. Vicky is a neurodivergent advocate and blogger. She runs the Actually Aspling blog, where she interviews lots of people. And she also has Facebook and Instagram and a YouTube channel as well. So she's everywhere, just kind of a real advocate for autism. So Vicky, did you want to say hi?
Hello. Thank you for having me on the podcast. As Emily's already said, I run Actually Aspling. It's an autistic advocacy social media based blog. And I am on, as she said, Instagram and Facebook and everything like that. Yeah, I think that's it. Just hello.
That was a good introduction. So where should we start? So how about just kind of like a little kind of background to your life, and maybe just talk about sort of past and growing up and whatever you want to, really. Maybe kind of what you're up to now and how old you are, that sort of thing.
Okay, so I'm 28. I always have to think about that when people ask me how old I am. I was diagnosed when I was 25. I'm diagnosed autistic. Previously to that, I was diagnosed with epilepsy, dyslexia, and dyspraxia.
Okay.
Through university. But then I think before that, I kind of thought I was autistic in my teens because I learned more about it. My childhood was a bit of a blur. I can't really remember much of it. My memory is not great, really.
It's fair enough. I'm the same. I can't remember my childhood.
I know I struggled with things like primary school and secondary school and making friends. And I found social interaction very difficult. But yeah, can't think what else to say.
That was a good little like background sort of piece. So you said that you found out kind of a few different kind of diagnoses that you have at uni. Was that kind of something that was sort of just like picked up as you kind of started at uni? Or was it something that you kind of went on to sort of know about?
Before I started university, I went to college because I didn't have like the right number of, I think it's UCAS points to get to university. So I did an access course first. And one of my tutors kind of thought that I might be dyslexic because we had to do this, like it's an initial assessment where they look at your different levels, like your maths and your English. And we picked up on a few little things, but I wasn't actually diagnosed with dyslexia or dyspraxia until my second year of university, because it took so long to kind of get the disability support.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. I know what you mean about like kind of just trying to like fill out all the paperwork for like the disability support and stuff like that, and getting like kind of funding for things. That's interesting though that you had to kind of wait till second year as well, because I'm guessing you could have kind of used maybe something like a dyslexia tutor in your first year as well, or something like that. Did you have access to anything like that?
In my first year, I didn't have access to anything like that. But in my second year, I got loads of tech support. So I got a laptop and specialist software. And I got access to a specialist study skills tutor who I'd meet with on a weekly basis to kind of go through my assignments and things like that. And then when I actually got the autism diagnosis, I got access to a specialist mentor from the National Autistic Society. And that was very different to my study skills. That was more talking about my life and what I was struggling with and things like that. And I found that really, really helpful.
That's great. I mean, that's good that you had access to that sort of thing. So what year at uni were you when you were diagnosed with autism?
In my final year, actually. I had to think about that then. in third year.
Okay. And can you sort of like talk us through the process of kind of, you know, how did you sort of, you said that you thought you might be autistic, but did you sort of go the kind of traditional route, like going to your GP, that sort of thing? Or was, how did you kind of start the process, if that makes sense?
I was in my teens, about 16, 17, when I first thought I might be autistic, because my mum used to work with autistic children and in an educational setting. And she used to come home and say, oh, yes, you're ticking all these boxes, like kind of joking with me.
Okay.
And I first went to see a GP. I think they were a locum. They weren't actually a practice doctor. And I said to them, look, I think I might be autistic. So she went to her computer. She printed off this random quiz. I don't know where she got it from, and asked me like a series of questions and said, do you have friends? Do you like to socialize? Can you go out with your friends? And I was like, yeah, I have a few friends. And yeah, I like to go to the cinema and we socialize, we hang out. And of course, because of that, she said, no, I don't think you're autistic.
Oh, okay.
And that was that for a while. And then I went to see a different GP who was fantastic and said to me, well, in order to get the diagnosis, we need to kind of apply for funding. And she wrote like a statement to, I don't know who you'd send it to, but she wrote like this statement and it came back saying there's not enough evidence. So I'm sorry, we can't refer you forward, which was a second knockback.
Yeah.
And then I finally went to the GP that I see now, who's amazing. And she referred me straight away to a company called Lancs UK. And they took me on and I had my assessment.
Wow. So it, in effect, it took three attempts for you to kind of get through to just being referred.
Pretty much, yeah. And I think after having the first knockback, I was a little bit kind of taken aback. I was just like, well, yeah, I kind of knew a bit about autism and being autistic, like anyway, because I'd done loads of research and stuff. And I was like, yeah, but people, everyone's different and people present differently and have different traits. And I was just like, I socialize, but that doesn't mean that I can't be autistic. And it was just really disheartening for her to say, no, you're not, off you go, and just kind of dismiss me so easily.
Yeah. And I think honestly, that's, you had the patience to keep at it. And, you know, it was something that must have been really hard. I can't comprehend having to kind of keep going back and, you know, trying to kind of fight your corner a bit.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but I got there in the end.
That's good. And also I realized we were both like diagnosed when we were 25 as well. So that's interesting.
That is interesting.
What was I going to say? So how long did you have to sort of wait until you got an assessment, or were you not on a waiting list?
It was actually really, really quick. I don't think I was on a waiting list. I had my first appointment in June of 2016, and I got my official diagnosis in the January of 2017.
Okay.
So it wasn't long at all. It was really, really quick. I was surprised because I'd heard lots of stories from other people about how they were on like a 2-year waiting list or 6 months waiting list. And I felt quite lucky that I got seen so quickly.
Well, I feel like just your determination, you know, it's a good thing you did get seen kind of quickly, because, you know, you'd spent so long trying to fight just to have, you know, be heard. So, oh, that's really interesting that you didn't have like such a long wait. That's nice to hear for a change.
It is nice, considering you hear lots of stories about people that have to wait so long.
Yeah, especially, I don't know, I guess like this pandemic as well is probably pushing back that sort of thing as well, which must be really hard because it's a long enough wait as it is sort of thing on the NHS. I appreciate that it's a free, you know, health service, but, you know, the waiting list can be really long. I was going to go on about, so at uni, so what did you do? I realised that you have a Master of Science in Psychology, but did you study something before that?
Yes, I did. I did my undergraduate degree in psychology. So that was 3 years. And then I did my master's, which was another year on top of that. So that's, 4 years. A lot.
And is psychology something you've always been sort of interested in?
Actually, no. A lot of my friends studied it at A level and said it was really, really difficult and they hated it. And okay. I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to take it. But then when I went to college to do my access course, it was access to education, but we also did psychology modules on the side. And I found that it was just something that I connected with instantly. Mm-hmm. And I really, really enjoyed it. So I thought, well, maybe it's something I could do at university. And then I looked into it and I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And ever since then, I've loved it. It's great.
Oh, amazing. Has it sort of kind of turned into more of a passion for you as well?
I'd say so, yes. Yeah. At first, it was just kind of like an interest, but it's one of my special interests now. I just love it so much.
And what other sort of special interests do you have, seeing as we're on the topic?
Psychology, autism, because I do a lot of research into autism, and that in itself has become a special interest. Mm-hmm. I'm also interested in kind of art galleries and sculpture and things like that.
Ooh, okay.
That's probably my main special interest. Mm-hmm. I like walking through forests and looking at like outdoor sculptures and things like that in the wild, I call it. That's
okay.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Okay, so you like kind of like going to like sculpture gardens and things like that?
Yes. That's me. That's what I do all the time. I love that.
Oh, amazing. So where was I going to go on from that? I keep losing where I'm going to go next. So you did 4 years at university. And so are you kind of, what are you doing sort of now? Are you sort of working at all, or is kind of your focus mainly on sort of your Instagram or blog, or is that like a side project?
I graduated, well, I didn't officially graduate because my graduation was cancelled because of lockdown.
But I
finished my master's degree in January. But I'd been volunteering at a local psychology charity, like service.
Okay.
But due to lockdown, I found it really stressful. So I've had to kind of stop that for the time being. Mm-hmm. But that was only voluntary. I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I submitted my PhD application. And I'm still waiting to hear back from my university, which is really scary. So I could potentially be going back to university in September, but I have to wait.
Okay. I see. I didn't realize that you kind of obviously finished a course, but you hadn't graduated yet even. So, oh, that's such a shame as well, especially with all this kind of lockdown stuff going on. It is like postponing everyone's, like, you know, not just like kind of life, but like career and like education as well at the same time, which must be really difficult. So what are you kind of planning to do your PhD in? Do you know?
Oh, see, I do. But it's one of those I've not told very many people yet.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm looking at autistic traits in children. I think it's children. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically saying that autistic traits are not defined by your biological sex or your gender.
Mm-hmm.
That anyone, regardless of like who you are, can present with whatever traits, because people say that camouflaging and masking is typically something women do, but men do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So I'm just saying that gender doesn't play a part.
Okay. I think that'd be a really interesting like thing to research into. And I definitely get what you mean. Like, I don't understand why kind of masking or camouflaging is so much associated with girls, just because maybe we're not, you know, diagnosed as early on. So that'll be really interesting.
It should be if I get accepted.
Yeah, I hope you do. And that's really, like, it's amazing to hear someone autistic who wants to go into researching around autism. Like, that's a really kind of refreshing thing to hear, because I think a lot of, you know, not to put other people down, but a lot of researchers might not have that sort of insight, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of people who do like research into autism aren't actually autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for me to kind of lead on the research, because I do have that experience, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it adds like a different like dimension, like a different perspective to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I hope your application is considered. Like, I'm sure it will be, but
I will.
Do you know when you're like...
I was going to say, I will keep you posted. I got a confirmation email last week to say they've received the application and it is now being considered by the research team. But I have no idea when I'll find out.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit difficult to know, like, especially when everything's going on as well. But I hope you hear back soon.
Thank you.
it's really like exciting to hear like someone kind of going on to higher education who is autistic and actually wants to study that further. So I'd be intrigued.
it is as well, because I think in the media especially you see kind of like all the negatives, like all the negatives of being autistic and how like we can't succeed and things like that. So I think it's really, really refreshing to see people, for example, going to university or getting a job, things like that. I think it's just really nice to hear like the positive things that no one really talks about.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's exactly it. I don't know any kind of neurodiverse people who have, you know, kind of share their story a bit, you know, a bit like you. I think that's why I enjoy following you, is because you share kind of both sides of things, both kind of being autistic but also like studying as well and your like special interests. And I think it's really interesting to kind of follow along something like that.
It's interesting for me as well to post this stuff, because I learn more and more about myself with every post, mm-hmm. I think as well. So that's really nice.
And when did you, like, just to kind of jump on the back of that, when did you sort of like start like posting on Instagram, and sort of did your blog come first, or how did it sort of get set up?
I think my Facebook page came first.
Okay.
I think I set that up in 2018. It was definitely January, 2018. Mm-hmm. And I think I started my Facebook page first and then my WordPress blog. And then Instagram. I started Instagram quite late comparatively to the other two. But
okay.
I prefer Instagram. It's much more visual, and I like that.
Yes, definitely. And I definitely think like the autism community on Instagram is really kind of, I don't know, just inclusive and like positive of like all the social medias.
Yeah, I used to have a Twitter as well, but I got rid of that because I never really used it and it gave me anxiety. And
yeah,
people didn't seem as welcoming or as friendly compared to Instagram.
No, I agree. Twitter's quite, I don't know, it can be quite political, it can be quite negative, and obviously there's a lot of kind of news circulating on it, so I definitely understand that it's kind of a anxious place to kind of log on to. But yeah, Instagram's much not calmer, but more inspiring, I think.
And there's so many wonderful people on Instagram as well.
And I like that it's just people from different walks of life at different kind of stages, different ages. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's such a diverse community, and it's nice to kind of see different experiences from people. But then again, seeing experiences that are similar to yours, but from a different kind of person, from their perspective.
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of know that you're not alone in, you know, certain struggles or certain kind of things you find difficult, just like, I don't know, just seeing a post from someone and they're struggling with the same thing, it's like, oh, I'm not alone.
yeah, it's nice to kind of read something and be like, oh yeah, I do that. It's nice to be able to relate to people.
Mm-hmm. So kind of what made you start your kind of online presence? Was there like a turning point, or did you just kind of fancy sort of doing it as a sort of way to kind of, I don't know, share online?
I think as I was newly diagnosed, I took a couple of months to kind of sit back and just kind of reflect on the fact that, yay, I have this diagnosis now. I've been waiting for so long, and it was such a relief just to kind of look back on my experiences, and it's like kind of self-discovery in a way. But I followed a Facebook page called Do I Look Autistic? And it was run by someone called Hannah Molesworth.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her page and what she was doing, and it really, really inspired me. And that, I think that's when I decided, hey, why don't I do something like that to share my story and my experiences? And I think that's where it all started.
Okay. That's really interesting to hear. Like, I think I was sort of quite similar. I saw what other people were doing online and thought, do you know what? I can add to this discussion and maybe meet some people who are like-minded along the way.
I think it's really nice as well to kind of take inspiration from other people.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So I was going to talk about your blog. So you've kind of, when did you sort of start doing kind of interviews? Because I have obviously been interviewed by you for your blog, which was really interesting. And you've got like a, I don't know how many interviews you've got on there, but you've got quite a like collection now. Did you just kind of start to do that sort of slowly?
My blog just started off originally sharing my experiences. And then I had other people this year for April, the dreaded April, the acceptance month. I decided to get other people to come in and write posts on my blog, which is how the interview started. And then I kind of thought, oh, well, it's nice to have other people writing, but there's also so many amazing people like yourself that people not necessarily don't know about, but the interviews are a way for people to find out more about someone. And that is how it started. And I just thought, well, who can I interview? And then I just kind of contacted a few people, and yeah, that was it. I enjoy doing the interviews because I'm able to ask different questions. And as I say, you get to find out more about a person that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I like the kind of range of people you've kind of talked to, you know, like creative people, like illustrators and stuff like that, but all the way to kind of, you know, kind of people from different walks of life and different ages as well, and different kind of career points and things like that. Like, it's really interesting to kind of, for me, being inspired by kind of older people and see their journeys and things like that.
I think it's really important to kind of get the differing perspectives from people as well, because no two people are the same, and everyone does have a different view on things. So it's really kind of nice to hear that and see that in the interviews.
Mm-hmm. I think also there's just the questions that you ask as well are, you know, quite kind of, they give you a lot of insight and stuff, and how people kind of cope with daily life and things like that, which I find really interesting.
Well, that's nice to know, because I hate writing questions because it takes me so long to think of, oh, what can I ask them? So that's really nice to know.
That's how I feel about doing a podcast. I'm like, am I asking the right questions? Like, there's probably kind of more things that I could get out of people, but it generally just turns into a chat.
I've only ever done, well, your podcast now and another one previously, and I'm always like, have I said enough? What do I say? And I'm constantly as I'm speaking, my brain's just like going round, like, what do I say? What do I say? Did I say the right thing? And I have to think carefully.
Same, don't worry. This is why I work from like a kind of set of like podcast outline, just so that I keep relatively on the kind of same track. So, talking about daily life, how are you coping? How were you coping before lockdown? And how are you kind of managing during lockdown?
before lockdown, I was at university and I had a routine and a structure, and life was great because of that. I still found things kind of like social interaction difficult, and I have a lot of sensory sensitivities and things like that. But mm-hmm. having the routine was great. And now that I don't have a routine, I'm finding it really difficult, because I used to like to go out of the house a lot. I don't like staying at home, and mm-hmm. being told that you have to stay at home was really hard.
Okay.
But a lot of like my local coffee shop has opened up now, which I'm so thankful for, and I'm able to go to the shops and things like that. But mm-hmm. it's hard. I'm finding the social distancing hard, because I have really poor spatial awareness, and it's the whole stay 2 meters apart. I don't know what 2 meters is, and I get really close to people without knowing it. So mm-hmm. I'm finding that really, really difficult at the moment.
That's fair enough. I think also with the whole 2 meter distance thing, like you say, you don't really know how big 2 meters is, but also just in terms of like spatially as well. I kind of know what you mean. And it doesn't kind of come naturally, does it? You forget all the time, even though, you know, it's all that's in the news is like social distancing and stuff. But no, I totally understand that.
I'm also one thing I'm finding really difficult is actually going to the supermarket. Mm-hmm. I know some people have said that they prefer it now, but I find it so stressful, because my local Tesco has arrows on the floor, and I stick to rules religiously, and mm-hmm. you have to follow the arrows on the floor. But it's really frustrating that other people don't follow the arrows on the floor.
Yeah.
And they end up walking into you, and it's just like, it's just really frustrating.
Yeah, especially when there's a process laid out, and that, you know, is the rule pretty much, is all you need to do is follow this. I can understand that would be really annoying.
And it's not hard to look at the floor and see the arrow, but it's really good, because I have a sunflower lanyard, which means I don't have to queue up anymore. So I can just go to the front of the queue and show them my lanyard. And mm-hmm. My husband comes with me, and we go in straight away. So that's really nice, because I don't like queuing.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely understand that, like, queuing is quite stressful in terms of, I mean, obviously I know we're not as close as we usually would be in a queue, but even just kind of checkout noises and just loud noises in general, like trolleys and things like that, can be really overwhelming. So that's good that I didn't realize that there was kind of more going on with the sunflower lanyard kind of within lockdown.
I knew that Sainsbury's used the scheme anyway, mm-hmm. but Tesco started using it, and I didn't know. It took me a couple of weeks to find out that I could just kind of go to the front of the queue. But someone mm-hmm. noticed and said, "Oh, you should have just come. We would have just let you in." But it does make such a huge difference. And I don't like people asking if I need help, but sometimes if you're wearing it, people will come and ask you, "Do you need any help? Are you okay?" Which is quite nice and reassuring.
Oh, that's good. I almost feel like, you know, if you'd known a bit sooner, that would have been, you know, helpful. And I mean, I know most people know what the sunflower lanyard thing is now, but you don't see a lot of it kind of in store, if that makes sense, I guess. You don't necessarily always, you know those things, like you can kind of go to the front of the queue and things like that. So it's worth knowing.
I think Sainsbury's, when they first started using it, advertised it, but Tesco's don't really advertise it anywhere, so it's hard to know. But
okay.
It is useful information.
Yeah. So you've really got to be in the know to just understand these things.
Yes.
Okay. So you're missing that kind of routine, which I totally understand, and I appreciate that routine just kind of helps, and to know that you're going out of the house and coming back at a certain time, it kind of gives you that sort of structure and, like, you know when your day's going to end and stuff like that. So how are you finding kind of having to stay indoors a little bit more? I mean, it's good that the coffee shops are open, like you were saying.
It's difficult. Mm-hmm. I find that I'm going to bed way later. I used to go to sleep at about 10, and now I'm going to sleep at like 1 in the morning, and I'm like I'll go to the fridge at midnight and just grab loads of snacks and just I don't like it. And I'm waking up way later as well, and I'm tired all the time. Me and my husband, we share like a visual timetable that we fill in that lets us know what we're doing and things. But
oh, that's good.
I don't have anything written on there. And the times when I do have things to do, I'm finding that I'm struggling to stick to it because I can't go out as much. And it is really, really difficult at the moment. But things, like I say, are starting to reopen. But I'm a little bit apprehensive about going to any of the major shops and things.
That's the thing. It's that not knowing, isn't it? You don't know what's the best thing to do.
And I find I don't like wearing the masks either. I find them so uncomfortable.
That's the thing as well. Like I totally, totally appreciate why we need to wear a mask. I totally get that. But in terms of like sensory and kind of just that kind of sensitivity, I totally understand where you're coming from. Like it's a difficult thing to, I don't know, just get used to, but also tolerate.
That's it. My parents bought some soft, I don't know what they're made out of, like cottony ones, which are really comfortable, but I find that they get really warm really quickly, and I find that I can't breathe as well when I'm wearing them, and it sits on my nose weird and makes my nose go all fuzzy, and it hurts behind my ears. And there's so many different little things that normally I wouldn't notice that because I'm wearing this mask, it's just like heightened. And people, I say to people, oh, it's really uncomfortable, and they don't understand why, which can be really like frustrating.
And I kind of feel bad like saying that as well, because like obviously, you know, there's like kind of NHS workers who are wearing them for hours on end, and it's like you don't want to be seen as like difficult, but you know, it's a sensory thing. Like they are really difficult to tolerate because it's just something you're not used to.
That's it completely.
It's definitely difficult.
You can get these cards from, I can't remember where you get them from, that say that it's like why you can't wear a mask. But I think I'd feel really like uncomfortable like showing it to someone.
Yeah. And just to be like, I don't know, you don't want to get into like questioning with someone, you know, at a supermarket or something like that, or just, you know, in general. It's, you know, as someone who's autistic, I hate being confronted. So that would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah, me too. Like, it's like I have a card, but sometimes they ask for more information, and it's like I freeze a lot of the time, and I'm just like, ugh. And
that's why you have the card. Like, please read it.
And then they keep asking more questions, and I'm just like, I can't do this. Please go away. And it just becomes really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I bet. Talking of like sensory stuff, I saw on your blog that your little kind of like about you section that you said that you like dislike crunchy food and loud noises because they give you sort of sensory overload. Can you kind of explain that a little bit further, and also like any other kind of sensory stuff you have going on?
So I don't like cereal. I only eat like Lucky Charms. They're the only cereals that I eat because of the marshmallows. They're really soft. But I don't like crunchy foods. The texture in my mouth when I crunch them between my teeth is just horrible. I don't know why. I just really don't like them. But I do like to eat ice cubes.
Ooh, interesting.
Which it is, because I don't like crunchy foods, yet I really like to chew ice cubes.
Is it the kind of the texture that you sort of crave, or the like, is it the cold?
I don't really know. I've never quite understood it myself. I just know I like to do it.
Okay.
But I don't like loud noises. Like, I'm scared of the vacuum, like the Hoover, because it's so loud. So when my parents are hoovering, I have to go somewhere else because it just terrifies me. And I don't like things like fireworks because they're, again, the bangs are really, really loud.
Yep.
But I like going to like concerts and things like that where the music is really, really loud. I can tolerate that because I think because it's something I enjoy.
I guess also it's something you're expecting, whereas something like a firework or a vacuum cleaner being turned on is something you might not be expecting. Is that part of it, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think I willingly and knowingly buy tickets for a concert if it's like music that I enjoy. It's pleasant to listen to, whereas I find the vacuum really unpleasant. I remember when I was a child, I was terrified that my mum would like sweep up my feet with the vacuum. I think that has something to do with it as well as the noise.
Okay.
So I'd always like move my feet really, really quickly as so that she didn't like get me with the Hoover, which is quite strange. But and I find bright lights really difficult because I am epileptic, and like flashing lights and bright lights are things that are a trigger for me. So I have special prescription glasses, which are just like my normal prescription, but they're pink, they're tinted pink, and that really, really helps like cut down with like sunlight and glare and like bright lights and things like that. So they've been really, really, really helpful for that.
Okay, that's interesting.
And I also recently I got a pair of ear defenders as well.
Okay.
But I find them really, really tight. I don't like that.
I know what you mean. And I don't know if you wear glasses, because I do. I find that they like pinch the like arms of my glasses behind my ears, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's really, really uncomfortable. My headphones that I use at the moment, they're really good like for noise cancellation and stuff, and I can adjust them a little bit more than the ear defenders, so my glasses don't rub as much. But I don't like the pressure of the ear defenders. They're really, really tight, and they're kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, I get kind of why, because it's kind of sealing off so that the sound doesn't get in, but they're totally not comfortable at all. And I don't know, I just feel a bit kind of, they're kind of bulkier.
I think I've got children's ones because I couldn't find, I was looking on Amazon because that's where I buy a lot of stuff, and they're all children's ones. I don't know if they actually make adult ear defenders, which is kind of strange.
I'd like to think like they do. I have like a construction workers kind of set. So just like you'd see a normal construction worker on, they're bright red. So obviously they're not the most subtle things in the world, but I think they're more of a like adult size, and you can kind of adjust the kind of height around your head. But again, they're quite tight, but I
thought of construction worker ones because they do use them.
Yeah, I saw them online somewhere. I was like, oh, this might be a bit better than like, there's the kids ones which kind of like fold in on themselves. These ones are more kind of like, they're just kind of normal headphone size.
Oh, I'll have to have a look at that, because I think my mum bought me mine as a present, and I was like, that's really nice. They're purple, but and they are really nice, but they're just, I can't wear them because they're so uncomfortable.
Yeah. That's the thing. You don't want to be uncomfortable whilst trying to block out noise, because then that's just another thing to be distracted by, isn't it?
That's it. It's just another thing to add to the overload.
Yeah. And is there kind of anything on the kind of flip side that you kind of seek, like sensory wise at all?
Oh, like, so yeah. I guess
the ice cubes is one of them.
Yeah, I only chew the ice cubes when I have them in a drink. I don't like go out of my way to like make them or anything. That's a really hard question, because most times I just think about like the negatives and like things that overload me. I like nature sounds and running water and rain and things like that. I think that's really pleasant to listen to. I also have a lot of like stim toys that I really like. I like squishy toys, like slow release squishy toys. I collect those. I've got loads of those now. And I really, really like Tangles. I have like, I call it my super Tangle. I went through a period last year of where I just bought loads of little like Tangles, and I put them all together, so I have like this really massive one.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
I can't use it. It's not practical at all because it's so big. But I just was like, oh, that sounds really, really good. I'll do that. And it's lying in a box somewhere, mm-hmm. because it's just like it's too big to actually like use. But it was really, really fun.
Yeah, I bet. I guess not so portable, but still, I think that'd be quite a cool thing to sit with your lap on, kind of thing.
That's it. I have a smaller version that's got like bumpy bits on and stuff, which I take out with me lot of the time.
I do like that about Tangles. Like they come with like so many different, like you can get like fuzzy ones. I saw the other day. I was like, oh, I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yes. I think, is she called Sophie on Instagram?
Yes.
She has a fuzzy one and it's like, I don't know what material, it's like felt or something. And that looks really good.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd never seen it before.
No, I don't. And people have ones with like rubber around the outsides and I don't know where they get them from, because I can only find like basic ones.
Mm. Yeah, only like the coloured ones. I've got a couple of like different coloured ones, but I was like, oh, I need to branch out into these like fancier textured ones.
Yeah, they look amazing. I think I'd like those. It's just like trying to find where they get them from.
Yeah, I think like also with like the squishies, like Amazon's quite a good place for that sort of thing. And I get what you mean about like the slow releasing ones, but I do find like they're just not as durable all the time. They kind of like rip a little bit.
Yeah, and they always smell funny as well.
Yes, yes.
Like, that really horrible plastic smell.
Yeah, like the kind of weird rubbery kind of, yeah.
It's really strange. My friend, one of my best friends, he sent me a squishy the other day and he got it and then sent it to me in its original packaging and it had been vacuum sealed.
Oh.
In like a plastic bag. It was so strange. It's just like it's a pineapple, like a glittery pineapple. And the instructions, I don't think are in English, but it says, take out of the packaging and leave for 60 hours.
What?
And because it's been like vacuum sealed, you have to, it didn't take 60 hours, but it says it takes 60 hours to like form back into like the pineapple shape. And I found it was just so strange.
Amazing. That sounds like one of those, you know, when you can buy like mattresses on the internet and they come like suctioned, like I'd expect that to take a few hours, but
yeah, it's literally just like that. And I was so, I mean, I love it, but it was so strange.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So do you have like a kind of like go-to like box of like fidgets and stuff then?
I do. I have what I call my self-soothe box and it's a biscuit. It's a pink biscuit tin. I liked it because it was pink. My mum gave it me. It had like Italian biscuits in it, and I don't know, but I have a pot of Play-Doh inside. I have this like, it's like a plastic disc shape thing and it's got water and glitter in it, and like you push it and it moves.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what they're called, but I have one of those. I used to have some Skittles in there as well, but I ate them all.
That's a good idea to have like chewy stuff in there as well.
I think because I did CBT for a while and there was this thing called like grounding and I used that as the basis for my stim box. So kind of like something I could like touch, something I could eat, something that smells. So I have lavender oil in there. Something I can, I think I've said taste. I have like a ball that's got water in as well that I can shake and it has like, well, it's got water in so you can hear the water. So I have loads of like different things for like different senses for when I'm stressed or in overload, which I find really, really useful.
Yeah, that's such a good idea to like kind of have specific ones for different senses as well. Like, because obviously like depending on your mood and like, you know, how you're feeling kind of, you know, sensory wise, or if you're kind of in a meltdown, you kind of want particular things, I guess.
It is, except for, like I say, the fact that I ate all the sweets one go.
You got to like stock up.
Yeah. But oh, no, really I really, really like that. It's just kind of, it is just my go-to, full of all my favourite things. And it's just there, like when I need it.
That's good. It's good that you've kind of worked out the things that help you as well. Like the half of the battle is kind of finding those things that will kind of calm you down a bit and things like that. So that's good.
And the thing is, what works for you may not work for somebody else. And it's trial and error, kind of finding out what does calm you and what kind of things you like and what works. But like you say, once you find that, it's magic and it's great.
Definitely. And I think also that's why I like the whole kind of Instagram autism community, because so many people have like really good coping mechanisms, and like some you can just, you look at and you think, oh, that's not really me. But others, you know, you look at and you think, oh, that's something I could actually try. And it's almost like, I don't know, just sharing like tips and tricks.
That's it. I saw something the other day. I see loads of people post like different like sensory toys and things. And I saw these like peas in a pod or what, it was peas in a pod. And I don't know who shared it or where it's from, but the peas pop out.
Cute.
It just so looks cool. Amazing. And I can't remember where I saw it, but I want one because it looks really nice and it's really small. So you can like put it in your pocket and take it with you and you just like pop it. Like you're popping peas and it looked amazing.
I could see that be a really good kind of like fidget to have, and like having like a coat pocket or something like that as well. That's so good. Like that's what I like about Instagram as well. It's just that little bit of like inspiration. But also I find it's a slight nightmare because you just literally want all these fidgets and you're like, I'm not sure I can afford all these.
That's it. And a lot of the ones I see like are from America and things like that. I get people... there's a really good fidgets Instagram. I think it's Fidgets by Jack, I think it's called. And they're so lovely. And they send me messages all the time offering me discount codes and things. But I'm like, I'm not American. I'm not in the US. So it'd be really, really expensive, like shipping wise. Yeah. And I always feel really, really guilty because the fidgets look amazing. And I'm just like, I can't afford the shipping.
Yeah. And then it's like the customs, isn't it? Like our side and getting it.
Yeah.
Like- Yeah, it gets expensive.
It does.
Oh, there's just so many fidgets I want.
I know, me too.
I just have to make like an Amazon wish list or something and just slowly work through them.
Yeah.
So in terms of kind of like where you're at now, do you know what you're kind of going to be doing for the rest of like, say, the summer? Or... Is kind of the whole like actually Aspling thing like a kind of thing that gives you focus?
It does give me focus. I took a bit of like a mental health break last week, but I find I can't stay off Instagram. It's really difficult. so that does give me focus, and I am going to be, it's kind of a side thing, but I'm going to be continuing with that. And I've got a holiday planned in August. In the UK, I'm going to the Lake District with my family. I usually go to Germany, but the convention that I was going to decided that it wasn't going to run this year because of the coronavirus. So instead of that, my family booked a holiday for 2 weeks
That's great.
The lakes. And We have to take our own bedding and things like that just for extra like safety precautions, but we are able to go. And
that's really good.
Most places are going to be open. So I'm looking at something to look forward to.
Yeah, I think that's really important as well, just to have, you know, even if it's not like a holiday, just something like little, but going away is quite a good way of kind of, I don't know, almost like resetting and then being able to come back like a bit more refreshed. I don't know if you get that as well.
Yeah, it's really nice to kind of be away from my own home because I've been indoors for so long. And it's really nice because my favorite place, like where my main special interest first started, is in the Lake District. It's where I'm. So my parents have said that only one day, though, they had to kind of be specific, but we can go there for one day. So that's kind of really exciting as well.
Oh, great. Oh, that's good. Oh, I'm glad you are able to like get away, because I think it is important. And you know, even if it's not like that far away or, you know, within the UK, I think I'm definitely someone who would kind of, you know, I don't like to go ridiculously far away on holidays, like, you know, something like kind of Europe or something like that, just because, I don't know, it's like a different routine to get into. But I think it is important to have a break.
Definitely. I think as well, we've not actually decided, but me and my husband are thinking of going back to Tokyo next year. which it's nice to just kind of, because we can't fly this year, it's nice to kind of be able to plan to do something like next year or the year after. It's just nice to have something to look forward to.
Yeah. And I think almost like part of the fun sometimes is the planning of like things you'll do each day and like an itinerary. I love doing that sort of thing.
When we went to Tokyo in 2015, my husband did that. He had like a spreadsheet. He has spreadsheets anyway, but he had an itinerary for like every hour of every day. Mm-hmm. And I found it a bit much, but it turned out it was great in the end, because it definitely helped with that routine and we knew what we were doing and it was really predictable, which is nice, because I mean, right now everything is like really uncertain and, you know, unprecedented and everything. And sometimes just having that predictability is just nice to kind of fall back on.
Mm. And to just know each day what you're kind of getting up and doing and the energy it's going to take.
Which is why I'm finding it so hard at the moment, because I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm. And it sounds kind of like, because you're out of that routine, your kind of body clock is slightly like, I don't know, off. Is that the right word? I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely is off. And it's just like, I've gotten so used to not having that routine that when I try and add like or implement a new routine, it just kind of like falls through. It doesn't work very well.
Mm-hmm. And do you have like any sort of like hobbies or anything like that that you kind of can like focus on during the day or anything like that?
I'm a runner. I like to run. So that is something that I've been doing during lockdown. It's not something that I can do every day because I get really tired because it's hard work. But that is something that I have kept going through lockdown and something that has definitely really, really helped with both like my physical and my mental health. So that's something I really, really enjoy.
That's good. And do you find like also it kind of helps to like tire you out sort of? Like just to kind of help kind of not only like you say, like your mental health, but also just like physically, if you're a bit more tired, you might sleep a bit better.
Yeah, I find that after I've had like a run, I do generally tend to sleep better, because I usually like, I run in the mornings and then I like shower and stuff. But sometimes I run in the evening and then I have a shower before bed, which is really, really relaxing. I've tried to kind of like set up like a bedtime routine. So sometimes I work out and then shower and then I do yoga before I go to bed, which really, really helps me to sleep. But that's just like a half hour thing that I do every night, which it's the start of something, but it's just like been difficult to kind of do it throughout the day because I live with like five other people. One of who is three years old. And I spend a lot of my time kind of looking after my niece. And it's really, really difficult to like plan anything because I do that most of the time.
Okay. I guess also kind of potentially kind of tiptoeing around at night time if you're trying not to wake up small people as well, potentially.
Yes. Yeah. Although me and my husband sleep downstairs and everyone else is upstairs. So it's not too much of an issue, but I've been told I'm very, very loud.
Really?
So I don't think I'm that loud, but to other people I come across as really, really loud. So I have to be careful with that.
It's interesting when you like hear that sort of thing about yourself, because you're like, oh, that's not something I associate with myself at all.
Yeah, it's really strange. Like my husband, he's the one who told me about like my spatial awareness, because we'll be walking and he'll be like, why are you walking away from me? Every time he moves closer to me, I'll walk away or I'll be slightly ahead of him. And I'll be like, oh, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm walking at the same pace as you. And he's like, no, you're actually moving away from me. And it's those things that you don't realize yourself that you're doing, but other people see it.
Yeah. And it's so like natural to you. Like I do that, like if I'm like walking with my mum or something, I'm the opposite. I'll like walk into her and she'll be like, Emily, you're all over the place. And I'm like, am I? Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm just kind of bouncing off people.
Yeah. And it's really difficult because like, I don't do that. And it's like, oh, maybe I do, but you don't see it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're coming up to almost an hour chatting. It's gone so fast.
I can't believe that.
I know. It's been really nice to chat. So I want you to mention all your kind of online links and things so that people can go and follow you and sort of subscribe to your blog and stuff.
So my Facebook and Instagram are the same. They are at Actually Aspling, and my blog is actuallyaspling.wordpress.com, I think. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you just search for Actually Aspling, everything should come up.
That was a very sensible move to do that and have everything the same.
It saves time.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, great. I'll also put like the links. I think people on podcasts say like in the description. I'm going to go for that.
That sounds good.
Does that sound professional?
I think so.
We'll go with that. It's been really nice to chat to you. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast, and hopefully we will speak again soon.
It's been really, really nice. I think a lot of the time I don't get to kind of like, I'm not used to doing podcasts, and it's nice just kind of be able to just like talk to people, especially mm-hmm. with everything that's going on at the moment. It's really, really nice. You don't really sit down and stop for an hour. I don't anyway, because I'm always so busy. But it's nice to just sit and do nothing for an hour and just talk to someone who understands you. It's been really, really lovely.
Oh, I'm glad you think so. And likewise, it's been really interesting to hear all about kind of your life, like before and after lockdown, but also like kind of your progression through education, and just the fact that I still can't get over the fact that you kind of three times you had to kind of go back and say, you know, I think I might be autistic. So I think you're definitely determined.
It's one of those things. I was going to say it happens a lot, but you hear stories of people who kind of go, because I know one of my friends went to his GP and they just said, oh no, I think you just got anxiety, you know, it'll be fine. But you do get kind of fobbed off a little bit. But for me, I knew what I was talking about. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure. And if you know what you're talking about, they don't want to like listen to you. They think that, I mean, I understand GPs like are knowledgeable and things, but it's like they think they know better than you. And it's like, well, I've actually done the research. I think, you know, I'm right here. And then it turns out I was right. And it's just kind of pushing to get someone to actually listen to you.
Mm-hmm. And I think also that's why you're really like a good advocate and like neurodivergent person to follow online, because you have been through that. So I think it's really great that you're sharing your experience.
That's really nice to hear.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And I'll be back with another podcast soon, hopefully. So yeah, it's bye from me. And do you want to say bye as well?
Yeah. Thank you for listening. And bye.